We have three more shiurim today. Next week is May 5th, and then the next week is May 12th. And then I think that the Bechina will be on May 19th. It will be like last time, in which the Bechina will be open notes and open sources, your own notes. And I'm also happy to send you my notes, though. Those obviously can't be used on the Bechina. Okay, so we'll do one more week, that is this week, on the topic of Bechira Chafshis. I got some feedback that there's still some issues that that you're interested in, and then we'll move on to another topic for the final 2 weeks. And what I wanted to talk about today was the scope of our Bechira. So far we've seen that we do have Bechira, and we've attempted to deal with certain issues relating to Bechira, such as divine foreknowledge. And the question we're going to discuss today is, to what extent am I actually free? Am I free in every respect? Am I free only in certain respects? And we'll begin with the Rambam, which is on the very bottom of page 106. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, Al yavor b'machshav techa davar zeh she'omrim tipshei umos ha'olam v'rov golmei b'nei Yisrael she'akadosh baruch hu gozer al ha'adam metchilas b'riyaso liyos tzadik o rasha. Do not think, what many people think, that God decrees at the beginning of a person's existence that there'll be a tzadik or a rasha. Ein ha'davar kein. Every person has the ability to be as righteous as Moshe or as wicked as Yaravam. It's interesting that the Rambam chooses an example of Yaravam as the paradigmatic villain. There are seemingly worse people in our history. Perhaps Yeravam is chosen because a lot of people are Chotei Machti, no? Think of other people also. So it's true. He was a big Rasha. I don't mean to...
Well, so one possible... mentions him also as a paradigm of racism.
Okay, so why? So one possibility, specifically in the context of Bechira, might be because his choice changed in an obvious way the entire course of history. There were two Jewish kingdoms, and half of them, we don't know where they went, and the like. So, one could really see the cataclysmic result of a person's decisions emerging from Yeravam. And another aspect, perhaps, you see, is that Yeravam, Hashem, the Gemara tells us, "Tafso Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yeravam bevigdo v'amr lo chazor becha." So Hashem, as it were, tried to bring Yeravam back, but ultimately his decision was up to him. And in that sense, we see the extent of our freedom. So a person could be like Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, that's important as well. We know Lokam Yisrael Kemoshe Od. So the Rambam says that means with respect to prophecy, there will never be a prophet as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. For whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we discussed why earlier in the year, wanted it such that Moshe Rabbeinu would be the greatest prophet ever, as he was the one who was the nosing Torah to Klal Yisrael, and Torah was given only once in history. It's never to be changed or altered. And thus, Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was greater than anyone else. But in terms of tzidkus, the Rambam says each and every one of us can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rambam continues, O chacham, o sachal. So we'll have to talk a lot about that. A person can be wise or fool. That too is within a person's bechira. O Rachman, O Achzari, O Kili, O Shav, V'chein Shar Kol Hadeos. Significantly, and we're going to return to this in a moment, the Rambam over here stresses freedom with respect to Deos, with respect to Midos. meaning to say, it is not simply the case that we are free with respect to our actions, we can decide whether or not to eat kosher or put on tefillin, but we are also free with respect to our deos. Ve'en lo mishi yechafehu ve'lo gozer alav ve'lo mishi moshcho le'achad mishnei adrachim elahu me'atzmo umida'ato notel eze derech shiyirtze. There is no other force that will cause him to do anything, even HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, he alone chooses his own path. Hush Yirmiyahu Amar Mepi Elyon Lo Teitzei HaRaos Vatov, as the prophet in the book of Eicha said, from on high, meaning from God, does not emerge good and bad. Kolomar Eina Bori Gozer L'Adam Lios Tov V'Lo Lios Ra. V'Kevin Shekein Hu Nimtza Zeh Chotei Hu Hefsid Es Atzmo. Ulefikach Roi Lo Livkos Ulekonein Al Chata'av V'Almashe Asal Nafsho V'Gam La Ra. Hu Shekasav Acharav Ma'is Onein Adam Chai V'Gomer. The Chazar V'Amar Holil V'Rishusenu B'Yadenu U'Mida'atenu Asinu Kol Haraos Ra'ui Lanu Lachzor B'Tshuva V'La'azov Rish'anu Sha'Rishus Ata B'Yadenu Hu Shekasav Acharav Nach B'Sadar Achena V'Nach Kar V'Nashuva V'Chulai, which is of course why the Rambam discusses B'Chira Chafshis and Hilchos Tshuva, because we both have the ability to sin, otherwise there would be no need to do tshuva, and moreover, we have the ability to change, the ability to do tshuva. The Rambam in this passage you see here, coming lafuke, four different theories or reasons, theories about that people had at that time concerning how we don't actually have freedom. So you see the Rambam Bala Fuke, the idea of fate or mazel, astrological fatalism, those who say that due to our mazel we don't have freedom. You see him coming La Fuke, a idea that God determines a particular person's path, that he's gozer mitchilas briyaso, which was a popular view among Kalam thinkers at the time. You see him stressing that there he rejects what's known as psychological determinism, the idea that a person's nature, who you are, your characteristics, somehow determine the choices you're going to make. And of course, as we saw last time, he tells us that foreknowledge is something that does not in any way preclude freedom. So, what is his conclusion? His conclusion seems to be radical freedom, right? The Rambam tells us that we could be whatever we want, as great as Moshe, as wicked as Yeravam, and we've seen psukim that support this idea. But Rambam goes a little further than the sources we've seen until now. Until now, we have seen that the Mekoros indicate that we have freedom with respect to our moral choices. However, Rambam seems to go much further than that. And to appreciate this, take a look at the Gemara Nida on page 107. The Gemara says, Darish Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Oso Malach HaMemuna Alehei Rayon Laila Shemo, V'notel Tipo Mamido Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'omer Lefanev Ribono Shel Olam Tipa Zumatei Aleha, Gibor O Chalash, Chacham O Tipesh, Ashiro Ani. So Hashem takes this future child, or the Malach takes a future child and brings it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what's going to be? Gibor or Chalash? Chacham O Tipesh, right? So there are certain things, aspects of a person, proclivities, that a person is born with. Their strength. Some people are born and they're going to be short and weak, and you know, they could do some amount of exercise and lift some weights and the like, but lemaisa, it's only going to get them that far. There are some people that, you know, they grow up and they don't work too hard in terms of exercise, and they don't eat particularly well, and they're 6 foot five, and you know, they could pick up a car. So there are things that we're born with. And included in this, the Gemara says, is Chacham Otipesh. Intelligence is not evenly distributed. Again, I don't think the Gemara is saying that there's no aspect of freedom in this respect, but there are certain aspects of intelligence. There could be a person, you know, there are people that don't work at all in school and the like, they're brilliant. And there are other people that work their heart out, and they're still quite limited in their intellectual abilities and the like. So, and Ashiru Ani, the Gemara says, right? Again, you'll have people that mamish work really hard and it just never goes well for them. Other people that everything falls into their lap. So the Gemara says that these types of things seemingly are not within a person's freedom. V'ilu rasho tzadik lo ke'amar. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say about this tipa, he'll be a rasho tzadik. Why? That's in a person's hands. Kid Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chanina, kol v'dei shamayim chutz mir shamayim, sh'ne'amar, v'ata Yisrael ma'ashem alo kach ha'shoa mi'mach ki'im liras Hashem v'gol mer Hashem asks of us yiras shamayim. That is entirely within our freedom. So the Gemara seems to be telling us that certain things are predetermined, like Chacham Otipesh, Gibor Archalash, and certain things are within our freedom, namely Yirah Shamayim. So this seems to contradict what the Rambam says. The Rambam had told us that everything is in a person's hands, and significantly, you know, the Rambam included Chacham among the list of things that are in a person's freedom, and the Gemara included Chachma among the list of things that are not in a person's freedom. So the Rambam is seemingly against the Gemara, and also intuitively, I think, we sympathize to a large degree with what the Gemara says. We all know that there are many aspects that don't seem to be in a person's control. So, what would the Rambam say? So, first of all, it's important to note that the Rambam does, in many places, explicitly acknowledge the powerful effect of natural predilections. Let's take a look at one source from Shmona Prakim, where he discusses this. I'm going to read just a little bit in the middle. He writes, "Eif sharshi valed ha'adam b'teva Bal Milo Bal Chisaron, Kemoshi Efshar Shivaled Bitava Bal Malacha Mamalachos, Aval Efshar." So a person is not born with a Milo Chisaron, just like, you know, when a baby's born, he's not a natural a piano player. Aval Efshar Shivaled Bitava Mucham Lamalo Chisaron. But a person can be born with a certain proclivity which makes it more likely for them to accomplish certain things. B'yos pulos achad yoser kalos alav mipulos acher. So some people will be born where learning to play piano will go very quickly for them, while others, the opposite. Kigon shia etzem mocho zach v'yakel alav lilmot. Some people will quickly understand things. Aval im yunach b'mozgo zeh mibli lilmot v'lo ye'orer kocho sav. Yisher belis safek sachal. So the Rambam says that a person will be born with strengths and weaknesses. So a person might be born with the potential to become a very intelligent person, but if he doesn't realize that potential, he'll remain a fool. But at the same time, the Rambam is certainly not saying that everybody is born with equal proclivities and equal, it's not like we're born with a tabla rasa, we're all born equal. That's not true. Some people, the Rambam acknowledges, will be able to get something very quickly, and some people will have to work very hard for it. But the Rambam here continues to assume, seem to imply, that ultimately everybody can get it. Amnam ani yodea Shemuskam alav mitorasenu umifilosofi yavan shepulos adam kulan misuroslo. And thus I maintain, and he says that the Torah supports this and Greek philosophy supports this, that the pu'ulos of an adam are kulan 100% in his power. Ein machriach aso bahen, v'lo mevio so, shiyateil letzad ma'alo, letzad chisaron, chutz mehi u'atzmo, ela shetiyelo hachana mizagim levad. So, everybody has hachana mizagim, everybody has natural tendencies, but ultimate success or failure is entirely in our hands. Shiyakel alav o yichbad. Likewise, in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam acknowledges the idea that everybody, in with respect to Deos, has natural tendencies. The Rambam, interestingly enough, seems to assume that people are all born with tendencies towards the extreme. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos explains that a person should seek moderation, the derech hamimutza, but naturally a person will tend towards the extremes. So he writes, Deus harbe yesh l'chol echad v'echad mibnei adam. I think this is a little later, you have this. Where I put it. Anyway, v'zu mishunem izu rechoka mimenu biyoser. So yesh adam shehu bal chema koes tamid, and yesh adam shedato miyushavet alav ve'eno koes klal. Some people, due to nature and nurture, are easily angered. Other people, quite the opposite, they're never moved. And he gives all sorts of examples. Yesh adam shehu gavalev biyoser, and some people are shafel biyoser. So due to nature, due to nurture, some people are bali gaiva. Some people are quite the opposite. They have a very low self-esteem, and so on and so forth. And he writes explicitly in Halacha Beis, Yesh ha-de'os, v'chol ha-de'os, yesh mehen de'os shehen la'adam mitchilas b'riaso lefi teva gufo. There are certain de'os, which include negative de'os, that a person has lefi teva gufo, nature, v'yesh mehen de'os, sometimes we're not born with it, but it's very easy for us to pick them up. Sometimes you learn them from others. We pick up a lot of things from our family, as we all know, and the like. So the Rambam again tells us quite clearly that even though he seems to be saying we have absolute freedom, but he also, in saying that, is not denying that there are natural tendencies. He's not saying we're a tabula rasa. We have these natural tendencies. Nature and nurture have a very powerful effect on who we are and how we behave, but ultimately we're free. So how are we miyashev the Rambam with the Gemara, we'll say, and perhaps even with our own experiences. So we're going to present two mahalchim. The first mahalich is what seems to be the simple mahalich, at least in the sources we've seen thus far, and that is basically that while perfection might be easier for some than for others, ultimately it's possible for everybody. And circumstances beyond a person's control will have an effect on who they are, but a person is able to overcome these natural proclivities to achieve perfection in every respect. So we saw before the Rambam said that people are born with certain deos, but we also saw the Rambam write at the very beginning in Parakei Folchus Tshuva that when he was defining the scope of free will, he said, with respect to deos, we're entirely free. And that's why the Rambam writes it also in terms of Hilchos Tshuva, that you have to do tshuva with respect to Deus. In Perek Zayin he writes, Al Tomar She'en Tshuva Ela Mi Aveiro She'esh Bahen Maisa Kegon Znus V'Gezel Gneva Ela K'shem She'tzarch Adam Lashuv Me'elu Kachu Tzarich L'chapes B'Deus Ra'o She'esh Lo V'Lashuv Me'en Min HaKas U'min HaEvo Min HaKino Min HaHitul ומרדיפס ממון והכבוד ומרדיפס המחלוס כיוצא בהן מהכל צריך לחזור בתשובה. In fact, the Rav had a very interesting diok. It's written in Al HaTshuva, but I think it's a very nice pshat. He notes that the Rambam in the first four Prakim Hilchos Tshuva more or less talks about Hilchos Tshuva. Then Perkei and Vav he talks about Bechira Chafshis, as we've seen, and then Perk Zayin he goes back to Hilchos Tshuva. So what in the world is discussion of Bechira doing in the middle of Hilchos Tshuva? Either put it at the beginning, because it's, like we said, a prerequisite for Tshuva, or do it at the end, so that you could understand the basis of Tshuva. But why does he interrupt his discussion of Tshuva to discuss Bechira? And the Rav argued that in Perek Zayin of Hilchos Tshuva, he focuses on Tshuva from Deos. Now, intuitively, we feel free with respect to our actions. So in the first four prakim, when he talked about tshuva with respect to actions, so he didn't need to introduce it with his discussion on Bechira Chafshas, because we all feel free anyway. It's obvious and intuitive. But with respect to certain types of things, like Deos, we don't naturally feel free. And therefore, before he talked about tshuva and Deos, he interrupted himself and discussed Bechira Chafshas, where he argued that we're have Bechira Chafshas even with respect to Deos. And now he goes back in Perek Zayin to discuss Tshuva with respect to Deos. So, again, it would seem this first Mahalach is that the Rambam unabashedly accepts radical freedom. That using our Seichel, we have the ability to overcome whatever natural tendencies we are born with so as to achieve perfection.
Now,
the Rambam tells you what perfection is. In terms of Deus, it's a derech hamemutza. There's perfection in intellectual ways, in terms of chachma and the like. The Rambam is always telling you what perfection is, in each and every respect. Now, that's the first mahalich, but I don't think it's correct.
How do we read this into
and
the
Gemara? And, won't be the first time we have a kasha from the Gemara. We'll get back to that when we do the second mahalich.
The Kasha is not on the Gemara, the Kasha is on the Rambam.
Yeah. We've talked about the Rambam and that topic as well. You're right. It's a good Kasha. And we'll get back to that. Maybe we could have an answer for that Mahalich. But anyway, I don't think this Mahalich is correct. And that's because of comments we see primarily in the Mor Nevuchim, where he explicitly says otherwise. He writes, for example, that some people lack the ability to comprehend subtle distinctions. And he writes that this inability is innate and cannot be overcome. The Rambam also tells us that a person's intellectual ability relates to their their ability to achieve certain things in terms of Torah and philosophy and perfection. And yet, he states that there are certain things that a person will never be able to grasp. Let's take a look at that. This is from Chelek Aleph, Perek Lamed Aleph, you have at the bottom of 107. Maybe I'll just read it in English. Know that for a human mind, there are certain objects of perception that are within the scope of its nature and capacity. On the other hand, there are amongst things that actually exist certain objects that the mind can in no way and by no means grasp. The gates of perception are closed against it. Further, there are things of which the mind understands one part but remains ignorant of the other. And when man is able to comprehend certain things, it does not follow that he must be able to comprehend everything. In general, we all know this to be true. It's important to remember, we can't understand everything. This applies to the senses as well. They're able to perceive things, but not at every distance, right? We can see red, but we can't see infrared. And all other powers of the body are limited in a similar way. A man can, for example, carry 2 kikar, but he can't carry 10 kikar. That individuals of the same species surpass each other in these sensations and in other bodily faculties is universally known, but there's a limit to them. So some people are stronger than others, but there's a certain amount of weight that no human could possibly carry, etc. All this is applicable to the intellectual faculties of man. There is considerable difference between one person and another person with respect to these faculties, as is well known to philosophers. So just like we said before, certain people vary in terms of their physical strength, and while within a certain window you're able to get stronger and weaker, but there are certain, you know, you can only go so far, no matter how much weightlifting and bodybuilding you do. And so, too, with respect to a person's intellectual faculties. While one man can discover a certain thing by himself, another is never able to understand it, even if taught by means of all possible expressions and metaphors, and during a long period. His mind can in no way grasp it, as his capacity is insufficient for it. So, that means there are certain things certain people simply can't understand. You could teach them for today, till tomorrow, you could review 101 times, they still won't understand it. Now, the Rambam obviously thinks that understanding things is very important in a person's avodas Hashem, as we know. And yet, he says that there are certain things that certain people simply won't be able to understand. This distinction is not unlimited. A boundary undoubtedly is set to the human mind that it cannot pass. There are things, okay, etc., etc. So, what the Rambam is saying is that people are unequally endowed intellectually, and this brings us back to our question that we started with, which is what then does the Rambam mean in Hilchos Tshuva when he says that a person could be a chacham or a sachal, and that entirely is in their ability. So I think the answer is that the Rambam maintains that everybody has it in their ability to realize and to fully realize their potential. And when the Rambam writes that everybody can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, it means we can fully realize our potential like Moshe Rabbeinu. Not only doesn't it mean we can't be a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, but it doesn't even mean that we could be a Chacham like Moshe Rabbeinu. Not everybody can learn Shas Baal Peh. Some people can't. And that's not what the Rambam meant when he says everybody could be a Chacham, because he clearly tells us that's not true. There are certain aspects of Chachma that people are not able to understand. Perhaps the Hagos Maimonios on this Rambam alludes to this point. He distinguishes between a Sachal and a Tipesh. The Gemara says that it's not in a person's ability to be whether they're a Chacham or Tipesh. And the Rambam says it is in your ability to be a Chacham or Sachal. Sachal, he says, is in a person's hands. And Tipesh is in the hands of God. So going back to the Stira, both in terms of Mor Nevochim versus Mishnah Torah, and also Mishnah Torah versus Shas, the answer is that perhaps when the Gemara writes that a person, when the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that a person could be a Chacham, he means a person could be wise, someone who is governed by their actions, governed by their intellect, not by impulse. And when the Gemara says that Chachma is not in a person's hands, it's talking about innate intelligence. And as we saw, the Rambam in Mor Nevochim writes that with respect to innate intelligence, not all people are equal, and there are certain limitations that a person may not be able to surpass. So what the Gemara is telling us, and what the Rambam certainly agrees to, is that innate intelligence is determined at conception, whereas moral intelligence and anything that relates to Yirat Shamayim is entirely in a person's ability. How smart you are has no moral value, or how intelligent in terms of raw intelligence. The question is, how do we use the gifts, the tools, that God has given us? And if that's the case, then the Rambam is not in any way against the Gemara. And with this we could understand another passage from the Rambam in Mor Nevochim. This one is from chapter 34 in Chelek Aleph, which I didn't give you here. But the Rambam over there writes that certain people are born with a natural disposition, a complexion of temperament with which perfection is in no way compatible. In Lashon, in the Ibn Tibbon translation, Yesh Anashim Rabim, Shemiteva Leidasam Yesh Lam Netiya Mizgit, Asher Ein Ima Shum Efsharut L'Shleimut. Shum Efsharut L'Shleimut. Perfection is in no way possible. What happened? This is the exact opposite of what he said in Hilchos Teshuva. And the answer is, like we said, that when he says that we could be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, it means to say that we can fulfill our potential as Moshe Rabbeinu did. But it doesn't mean that we could all have the ability, whether it's in terms of Havana Satorah and Yediya Satorah, and even in terms of other aspects of Shleimos, be perfect like Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's what we said, that these types of things are very much affected by a person's genes, a person's environment in which they were raised, and the like. Now, obviously, the Rambam does think, and Chazal do think as well, that we are very free to a large degree. And it's also obvious that a person, as the Rambam writes explicitly in Hilchos Teshuva, is only held accountable with respect to things about which he is free. So if a person is born in such a way that they can't know Shas Baal Peh, so obviously they won't be held accountable for their not knowing Shas Baal Peh. And the same thing with respect to all things. So the Rambam, it's interesting. We'll see if we have a chance to talk about this today, but a lot of times people, I remember when I was once, went to a shir and somebody presented Rambam versus Rav Dessler as two diametrically opposed schools of thought with respect to Bechira Chafshis, with Rambam saying everything is biyad Adam, and Rav Dessler saying only a little itty bit is. But the truth is, I don't think that's what Rav Dessler means, and as we've seen, it's not what the Rambam is saying either. Whether or not they're exactly, there are differences, there might be differences between them. But fundamentally, the Rambam agrees to this notion, the idea that our freedom is not absolute, but rather we have absolute freedom in the realm of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is very broad for the Rambam. And like the Rambam says, we could all be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's 100% true. That there's no denying that we could be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes?
famous Reb Chaim that, you know, let's say the Chassidim of Musa Olam, that, like, or people that don't have the right deos, the cause and effect, they don't get, according to the Rambam, the Gan Eden, or whatever you want to call the perfection of their deos, because they just didn't arrive at the right conclusion.
We'll talk about Olam Haba maybe next week. So it's not, we have to know what Olam Haba is to answer that question. Yes?
So if we have the capability to be a tzaddik, if everyone has the capability to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, how does that square with what he says that some people are born with intellectual limitations?
What's the stira? You can be tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu even with intellectual limitations.
Lama oretz chosid.
Okay, so there's quite everybody can accomplish quite a lot. But that doesn't mean that you could accomplish everything. So, another point that emerges in the Rambam that's important to keep in mind is because the Rambam does acknowledge are the effects of, let's say, environmental factors, even though the Rambam very much plays up a person's freedom and his ability to choose to do what's right, so the Rambam also stresses that you have to acknowledge your weakness in this respect. So, for example, the Rambam writes in Perek Vav of Hilchos Deos, Derech Briyaso Shel Adam Lios Nimshach B'deosav Uvimasav Achareyav V'chaverav. It's natural to be influenced by your friends. V'noeg B'minag Anshei Medinaso. And people are very strongly impacted by their surroundings. And therefore, the Rambam says, let's say you're in a wicked society, you have a group of friends that aren't so great. So the Rambam, so you have a Shaila, right? What's my Shaila? I could go ahead and say, okay, well, stick around this wicked society, because the Rambam told me that I have bechira chafshis with respect to Deus. So that's not what the Rambam suggests. He says, Lefikach tzarch Adam, l'schaber l'tzadikim, l'leishev etzel chachamim tamid, and you have to be misrachik min harishayim, v'holche choshach, and he even says that ad kedekach, that if you live in a country and everybody is bad, so what are you going to do? You should go, and you can't find a good chevra, live alone. Move to a desert. Live in a cave. Right? So even the Rambam, who played up the extent of our Bechira with respect to Deos, says that because our surroundings have such a powerful impact on our Deos, so therefore you should stay away from people with bad Deos. So the Rambam tells us in our own Avodas Hashem, despite our incredible Bechira, it's also important to acknowledge our weaknesses and the like. Now, this idea that a person is born with a certain predilection, we saw in the Gemara that we saw in Nida before, and it relates a lot to the Gemara's understanding of the idea of mazel. The Gemara in Shabbos writes, "Haiman de b'madim yehe gavar ashidama." Someone born in Madim, Mars, which is, as we saw last week, associated with blood. So he's either going to be a murderer, Amar Vashi, iumna, iganva, itavcha, imo'ala. So what's he going to be? He's not going to be a murderer. He's going to be a shofech dam. But what? How so? So he'll either be a bloodletter, maybe a doctor, surgeon, or a ganva, he's going to be a thief, a bandit, otavcha, he'll be a shochet, or a moel. Meaning to say that this fellow that's born with a certain predilection, their mazel is such that they have an attraction to blood, but that attraction, that proclivity, can be used positively. He could be a doctor, it could be used negatively, like a ganev, it could be used neutrally, like a butcher. All that is in our hands. So what the Gemara is telling us is that our freedom is realized with respect to the way in which we direct our natural proclivities, but not in the actual proclivities themselves. Take a look at the Meiri, who formulates this in an interesting way on page 109. Pinos hadas, So though people have proclivity based off of mazel, but that doesn't make him muchrach in any way. Rakote bevchiro v'ratzon, and therefore, if he sins, that was done freely. Mepnei shashem nasan biyadu bechira lahachriach teva toldaso, the gidre hadas yeshivuhu mitivo limshol beatzmo levilti leches acharei ikvos toldosav. So we saw this in the Rambam, but it's worth stressing, which is that freedom is realized insofar as we are able to overcome teva toldaso. So we're born with a certain teva, but we are able to overcome that teva. The Tashbetz writes that a person's nature is ostensibly shaped by their genes, by their environment. You have that over here. And he goes so far as to formulate this as a gzera. But at the same time, a person has the ability to go against their nature. And the Tashbetz writes that this does not happen naturally or automatically. In other words, if a person does not step in to fight their nature, then they will live based off of their nature. So, in a certain sense, we've been talking about a person's bechira. But what these makoros are informing us is that you have to choose whether to tap into your freedom or not. You can live a life where you don't experience freedom, where you simply follow your nature, or you could realize your freedom. But it's not automatic. Freedom is not automatic, and it's not even easy or natural. In fact, the Chassid Yaivitz, you see over here, before the Chafetz Chaim is not Rav Yaakov Emden. He lived from 1440 to 1508. He was from the Grushei Sfarad. So he writes over here, you see, Ro of Anashim Nisharim Al Tivam. Most people don't realize that freedom. They live life habitually. So while we have Bechira, they're stressing that you shouldn't think that Bechira is automatic. And that's why Rav Volbi writes about this. A person can very easily deny the existence of freedom because they might not have actually ever lived freely. A person can... How often do we successfully fight our teva to do something that's right? So a person could go their whole life without doing that. And such a person has no shaychus to what bechira is. They've never actually even experienced it. They have that ability, but they've never realized it. And therefore, not surprisingly, they're going to deny its existence. And that's what these makoros are saying to us. And many of the Rishonim, the Achronim, stress this. The Sefer Ikrim, which I didn't include over here, Maimar Dalid Parakei, talks a lot about this. And the Sefer HaIkrim writes, basically, that once we've seen all of this, then we should acknowledge that a person's actions can be classified in one of three ways. They could be free, they could be forced, or both. I'll just read you a little bit from it. V'achar she'yefshar she'yihyu kol ha'pu'ulos ha'anoshiyos be'achreach v'lo kulan bevchira v'lo kulan me'uravos min ha'achreach v'abechira lo nishar ela she'yu miktsasan bechirios u'miktsasan muchrachos. So a person's actions, a person's decisions, fall into one of three categories. Some are muchrachos. So while there's no absolute determinism, but there's partial determinism. A person, due to their nature and their nurture, will not really consider certain options. If a person is born into a family that isn't Shomer Shabbos, so maybe, at least at certain points in their life, they might not have Bechira Chavshis with respect to Shmir Shabbos, right? Maybe at a certain point in their life they will. They'll be introduced to it, and they'll have the ability to choose. But at certain points in their life, they might not be Bechiri. And the same thing might be true with respect to certain negative emotions, like anger, due to their nature and their nurture. So there's certain things in our life which we're not really free. There's certain things in our life which we're absolutely free about. And then, he says, there's certain things that are mi'uravos, that certain decisions we're partially free and not. And the Ramchal says the same thing over here. You have it in Der Chachma. V'hinei tira sheyesh bepulos adam uchrachos uvechirios, ki yesh ma shetivo machricho, o kibutzo hamedini, some things, his teva is machriachim, or there's society societal hachreach, v'yesh atluyos legamri b'chiraso, and then there are things that are entirely in his ability. And again, when you see these sources, you see that Rav Dessler's chiddush, what's known as Rav Dessler's chiddush, the nekudas habachira, is really not the chiddush of Rav Dessler. Many sources already make the same point well before Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler beautifully developed it and expanded upon it, but it's not something that he made up. And the idea, the way Rav Dessler puts it, is that a person has a certain nekudas habachira, meaning to say, you're not actually free with respect to most things, because there are all sorts of options that I will never consider where I'm holding. In theory, they might be free, in the sense that I have the physical ability to do them, perhaps, but they're not something I'm thinking about. And that's both with respect to good things and with respect to bad things. And a person is held accountable based off of the choices they make that are within that Nekudas HaBechira. And moreover, the Nekudas HaBechira changes throughout a person's life. He gives the example of a line of scrimmage. His example is not a line of scrimmage in a football game, but in a war, in trench battle. But it's the same idea. In other words, you could be born at the 30-yard line, and it's in your ability to make it to the 60-yard line. And if you do, then you're the tzaddik k'moshe Rabbeinu, like the Rambam described. Somebody else might be born on the 70-yard line, and he only makes it to the 75-yard line. So in terms of objective accomplishments, he's gotten much further than the person who made it to the 60-yard line. He knows much more of Shas. He's done many more mitzvos. He has many more children, all sorts of things. Objectively, he's well ahead of the other guy. But he's really accomplished much less. In his life, he's moved 5 yards ahead. The other fellow moved 30 yards ahead. And a person is held accountable for these things. And they change. A person goes ahead where I'm holding right now. So perhaps my Nekudas HaBechira is, you know, whether I'm going to come in time for Shacharis or not. At where I'm holding, I'm not even really actively considering skipping Shacharis or even davening in my room. No. It's kimat automatic. It's on autopilot that I daven with a minyan Shacharis. But I could come on time. Or I could come 5 minutes late. So every morning I struggle. You know, do I hit snooze on my alarm clock and then I'll be 5 minutes late? Or do I get up with Zrizos and come on time? If I go ahead and work very hard and consistently come on time, 2-3 weeks, mamish, every day I'm on time, my Nekudas HaBechira might change. Maybe then my struggle will be whether I come on time or 5 minutes early. So, you know, I get my tefillin on before davening and have a couple of moments of reflection before I begin Shacharis. Or no. And the other way, if I hit the snooze every time, so my struggle might be not whether I'm on time or 5 minutes late, but whether I'm 5 minutes late or 10 minutes late. That is always going to be changing based off of the choices a person makes. And that's what mitzvah goreris mitzvah means, and the like. And there's a lot to talk about here, but I think these are well-known ideas, so we won't spend too much time on them. Yeah, Shmuel.
Is that to imply that some tzivuyim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are not shy?
Okay, so let's talk about that for a moment, since you brought it up. I was going to talk about praying to change our nature, but we'll leave that for now. Instead, let's talk about the question that you're alluding to, which is there such a thing as a nisayon that cannot be passed? We all have heard many Musar Shmuzin that there's no such thing as a Nisayon that cannot be passed. However, take a look on page 111. So, of course, the Pashup Pshat is there's no such thing as a Nisayon that can't be passed. Like we saw before in the Gemara, Kol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Mir Shamayim. But Yir Shamayim is entirely in a person's ability. And moreover, it seems absurd to even consider the notion of a Nisayon that can't be passed, because that's exactly what a Nisayon is. But let's take a look at this passage from Reb Tzadok. Pamim yesh adam omed b'nisayon gadol kolkach ad she'i efshar lo shelo yachata. There are times that a person can face a nisayon that's so great that it's impossible for him not to sin. Kederach she'amru mayaseh ben v'chulei. The Gemara we all know. You go ahead, you put the kid in front of a beis zaynim with a pocket full of gold and the like, and ma yaseh ben v'lo yachta, which he says is literal. Uvezehu nachshav ones gamor derachmana patre. Should a person be chote in such a scenario, he's considered an ones gamor. So of course he's not nanash. V'gam ba'asasas hayetzer betokef atzum she'ef shar lenatzcho shayach ones. It's shayach to have a nisayon where the yetzer har is so strong that you can't overcome it. And there too we find it shayach ones. V'mashem yizbarach chesev es libo hari'en chet zechet klal rak sheratzon Hashem yizbarach hu kach. Reb Tzadok gives, if you read on, a little interesting example from the Gemara Pesachim and Ksubos. Let's see the one from Ksubos. The Gemara says over there that there's such a thing as tchilaso beratzon v'sofo be'ones. So what does that mean? That means that when this woman, sorry, tchilaso be'ones v'sofo beratzon. So let's say a person, a woman, is initially forced. It's originally ones, but then she's no longer forced, but she continues to do it. And the halacha is that this too is considered ones. Why? Because yetzer al b'shei. And halachically, it has the status of an ones, even though, technically speaking, it's bertzona. Now, Reb Tzadok over here adds a very important caveat, which is, ein ha'adam atzmo, sorry, aval ha'adam atzmo ein yachol l'ha'id al atzmo b'zeh, ki ulai adayin hayel o'koach l'akuf ha'yetzer. It may be the case that there are certain nisyonos that we can't pass, certain challenges that we're not able to overcome. But you can't really know what they are. A person cannot therefore absolve himself of a particular sin and say, well, I have or I had no choice but to commit it. Because you don't know really what your abilities are. So while it is true that there are certain nisyonos that perhaps are just too strong for a person to pass, but you don't know what they are. And therefore, we always have to try as hard as we possibly can. Rav Huttner says an interesting idea. If you take a look, it's in a letter, page 112. He accepts this premise, and he talks about the role of tshuva for these types of chataim. And the Shoel asked him that there's a pasuk in Malachim that implies that a person is still punished for the sins that they had no choice but to commit. The pasuk says, "Ki yachata olach, ki ein adam asher lo yachata, v'anavtavam, v'nasatam lifnei ha'oyev." So a person will sin to you, and there is no choice but to sin. Ein adam bar tzasher yastam lo yachata. So he sinned in such a way. And still, v'anavta bam, you'll be angry at them and you'll punish them. So the Shoel in this letter asks, why is that? Why should a person be punished if they have no choice but to sin? And I recommend that you read the letter inside. We don't have time to read it inside now. He gives two answers. But the first answer is that a person will certainly not be punished for a sin that they had no choice but to commit. But as we saw from Reb Tzadok, a person can't know that a particular sin that they committed was of that category, at least generally speaking. It's interesting if maybe under certain circumstances that would be different. It's important to think about, especially when helping people change and that are living with guilt and the like, but at least generally speaking, Rav Huttner says, and Rav Sadok says, that you can never know if a particular chait that you did was something that was beyond your control. And therefore, you have to do tshuva. And if you don't do tshuva, that reflects a lack of appreciation of the gravity of the sin. And therefore, you're held accountable and punished for that lack of tshuva, for that lack of appreciation. So in a chanami, there are things that a person might not be able to not do. But since you can't know what they are, you have to do tshuva. He says that's a pshat in a bracha, harotze b'tshuva. What does it mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rotze b'tshuva? He doesn't want us to sin. Why does he want us to do tshuva? So the answer, he says, is because there are certain sins that we have no choice but to commit. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rotze b'tshuva, even for those. Ayin Sham. Another thing that I guess I'm going to have to briefly summarize, because I did want to discuss with you, but we're out of time, is another question, totally different question, relating to the scope of freedom, and that is whether we can cause someone harm that's undeserving of pain. So this relates back to our discussion on Hashkacha that we had earlier, but a number of thinkers assume the answer is no. Even though we have freedom, our freedom does not allow us to cause pain to someone who's undeserving. One pasuk that's frequently cited to support this idea is from Yechezkel. Fatzofe ki yireh es hacherev ba'a ve'lo sakah b'shofar ve'am lo nizhar. You have the tzofe, the watch guard, and his job is to watch for the enemy coming. But the problem is, he's texting his friends on the phone, so he doesn't notice the enemy coming. So he doesn't blow the shofar, he doesn't sound the alarm, and what happens? So nobody is ready. And a lot of people die because this watch guard was playing on his phone. So the pasuk says, "Hu ba'avono nilkach." Anyone who dies died because they were deserving of death. V'damo miyad hatzofeh drosh. But God says, "I'm going to hold the tzofeh, the watch guard, accountable for their death." Because they died because he was slacking off. And Rav Sadia Gaon writes that what this indicates is that a person does, in fact, have freedom. In this case, the watch guard has the freedom to decide whether he's going to do a good job or sleep on the job. But at the same time, anyone who dies because they're deserving of death. So both are true. So therefore, that Sofez held accountable for their deaths, because he had the freedom to avoid their deaths. But at the same time, the people who died were not innocent. And many of the Rishonim, when expressing this idea, quote the Gemara in Tainus, when the story of they were about to execute Lulianus and Pappus, and they said to them, you know, is a miracle going to happen to you, like what happened to Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah? And they said back, "V'anu nischayavnu klai lamakom v'eina tahor ragnu harbe horgim yesh lamakom v'harbe dubim v'arayos yesh lamakom be'olamo shepogim banu v'horgin osanu." He says, "No, it's not true. Say that maybe we'll die, but you should know that if you kill us, it's because we're chayiv misa. You have the ability, of course, to choose to kill us or not. And if you choose to kill us, you're a murderer, and you're held accountable for that murder. But don't think that if you do murder us, freely choose to murder us, that you've killed innocent people. Because if we die, it's because we're chayiv misa. And harbe shluchim lamakom. So if you don't kill us, if we're chayiv misa, we'll die some other way. A bear will come and eat us." That's the idea of harbe shluchim lamakom. And a number of Rishonim and Achronim endorse this view. In other words, perhaps, so any time I cause somebody pain, physical pain, emotional pain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to experience that pain. However, I still have the freedom, and if I do the right thing and don't cause them this pain, so they'll get that pain some other way. And if I do, so then they do. Har Beishluchim L'Machom. Not everybody seems to agree to this. There's a famous Archaim HaKadosh on page 134 that's very well known, who implies, I guess we don't have time to go through the whole shtickle, but implies that you can in fact cause pain to people undeserving of pain. He says that was the cheshbon of the brothers of throwing him to the pit. They said, look, we could kill Yosef even if he's undeserving, so it's not fair for us to kill, so we'll throw him into the pit, and then he'll be killed by animals. So if he's deserving to die, he'll die, and not sort of like the witch trial test, right? But it seems to be that the Orchaim thinks that was, and not to say that you could throw people into pits full of scorpions, but fundamentally that cheshbon was correct, and the Zohar Kadosh below seems to say similar thing. Others deny that the Orchaim really said it. To summarize, since we don't have time to learn this up, many thinkers, Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Bachi ibn Pekuda, the Sefer HaChinuch, the Abarbanel, the Gra, all maintain that it is impossible to cause somebody to be harmed if Hashem doesn't want them to be harmed. Others, again, like the Archaim and the like, seem to disagree about this. Another point that we were going to talk about today, but we don't have time, but just to tell you what you're missing, something to think about, is I wanted to talk about the scope of Bechira with respect to thoughts. We're free with respect to actions, and we talked about Deos, but what about thoughts? And our ability to control our thoughts and to control our emotions and the like. I guess we'll have to leave it here. But we'll pick up next week, Be'ezras Hashem, and you'll have the Bechira, perhaps, maybe, maybe not, to come or not to come. Have a good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Yeah.